It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Good morning, everyone. How are you guys this morning?
Howdy, howdy. Doing good.
Happy to have a little sunshine this morning, although it's 16 degrees outside.
Isn't that weird for Atlanta? This has just been so strange.
Welcome back, Jason.
Thank you, sir. Feeling a lot better over last week. Sorry I missed out, guys.
It was like an old school show. I only had three audio files to edit. It was so much weirder to... I got through so much quicker. It was amazing.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if, you know, when you said the subscriber count was way back up this week, that, you know, if that wasn't really a jab at me.
No, that was purely coincidental. I think people are back from Christmas and they're listening again.
Oh, that a-hole Jason is gone. We can listen again.
So, let's talk about some personal issues that are going on. Jim, your Wi-Fi. We've joked about this for years, that you live at like the nexus of all radio interference in the universe, and apparently it's become too much to bear. So tell us about what's going on.
I live on the eighth floor of an old building in downtown Dallas, and there's a lot of Wi-Fi signals here. So you've got, you know, everybody in my building, and then within, you know, a two-lane street outside my window, there's another 17-story building, 18-story building next door, and my building's 17 stories. And then, you know, across the street, there's another, you know, 30-story building. There's a whole lot of Wi-Fi going on down here. I've tried several different routers. I even bought, I forget the name of it now, I'll have to look it up, put it in the show notes, the one that supposedly has the radio bands that technically you can use but you're not supposed to use, that are different than the normal bands that are better for crowded areas. That one didn't.
He's trying to use illegal channels?
That one didn't work either. And my Charter, Spectrum, Time Warner, whatever you want to call it, internet, it's really flaky as far as it'll be running really slow. I can call them. They'll ping my modem to see what's going on and tell me everything's fine. And it all works fine again. Like, all I have to do is call them. They don't send anybody out. But for some reason, when they ping my modem, my speeds go back up. It's almost like they're like, oh, he noticed that it's going slow again. Turn it back on. And I mean, I don't know, you know, that's totally not the case, right? I mean, this week I'm moving from the 8th floor to the 10th floor because they want to renovate my unit. And so I'm moving to a unit that's already been renovated on the 10th floor. So as preparation for this move, I decided to go ahead and upgrade to the super class Wi-Fi that you guys have been running for a while, the Ubiquiti Unify stuff. So I have all that on order. It'll be here this week before I move. So hopefully my plan now is to just have the super strongest Wi-Fi signal I can buy for, you know, home use. Maybe I can just drown out the other signals here. No matter what channel I'm on, I'll have the strongest signal on that channel. So we'll see if that works. And as part of it, I called to have my service transferred from one unit to the other. And of course, there was a special offer going on, and my price went down $20 a month, but my speed is going from 300 to 400 because they now offer 400 down. You know, it's just the cable industry is pretty messed up. So that was...
Just wait till the promotion's over, and then it goes up 40 extra bucks a month for over what you were paying. That's the thing. You always have to watch when the promo ends.
Yeah, it's 90 now, I think, and I'm guessing this will probably go up to 90 or 100 or 110 when the promo's over. But I mean, you know, it's like the whole business model is around just keeping you around as long as they can while still collecting some money from you. And it doesn't necessarily matter how much money at any one time, but as long as they have a bunch of customers, it's okay.
You really need to look at going business class if you possibly can. I know that made a big difference for me, even though the speeds were lower for the same amount of for the price. It was a lot more consistent, and having the SLA around it really helped a lot. So it's something worth investigating. If because I used to have to do that same thing too, where you'd call the cable company every 6 months and get the newest promotion, and it was always ridiculous. So I sympathize with what you're going through.
Yeah, so when we moved into the house we're in now in October of last year, I'm on Comcast, and, you know, AT&T Gigafiber, you know, they're knocking on the doors of neighborhoods, right? I mean, they're getting deployed all over Metro Atlanta. And so when I signed up here, I knew that Gigafiber was at least a year out, if not more, from my subdivision, just because they're doing some road work expansion, and nobody's going to lay fiber in the middle of the road when they're doing road work. when we moved, I got a promotion for Comcast Triple Play. The price was like better than I'd ever seen it. And I get everything. I mean, HBO, Starz, Cinemax, Showtime, 150 meg down, 25 meg up. In order for me to get the great price, though, I had to commit to a 2-year deal with them. But that also locked in the price for 2 years. So I have no idea in October of this year, when my 2 years is up, what that price is going to look like. But I'm certain it's definitely going to be more than the like 160 I pay right now for all of that.
It'll probably go up to like 300 or so. And I should qualify here. So Friday morning when I called support about my connection, I pay for a 300 down now. And I have a Google On Hub router that I use here because it just seemed to be consistent. I know. Spotify was skipping. My connection was so bad on Friday morning.
That was a bridge too far. You don't mess with Jim Spotify.
Exactly. I mean, like, okay, movies might have some problems sometimes, whatever. But Spotify skipping from, you know, on my laptop, that's crazy. So, I mean, and I did the speed test and I did their speed test, you know, and it's showing 10 or 20 if that, you know, it was just really bad. And so I'm hoping up on the 10th floor, maybe the cabling will be better or something. We'll see if we can figure this out.
Well, between Brian and I, we should be able to get you squared away on Unify. Brad, are you on Unify equipment as well? I think you are.
Yeah. He was the first of us to get on to Unify, I think. Or at least, I don't know. He may have done it. You guys may have done it at the same time. But I know that I was second. I wasn't the first to do it. But I had read an article on Ars Technica a couple of years ago. And it was like, this is intriguing. And then when I guess the Airport Extreme that I had was sort of end of life unofficially, I was like, you know what? It's time to go and upgrade. And man, I'm glad I did.
I mean, the thing I love about those Ubiquiti products, like, I feel like you're getting enterprise class quality at kind of market rate prices. I mean, even in some cases, you're getting stuff way cheaper than you're buying the other commercial stuff. Like, you know, you can get the Unify AP AC Pro for like $125 or the long range version for $100. And you compare that to like the specs on, say, like one of the Asus routers or you know, or one of the Asus access points. I mean, you're talking a couple $100 savings there.
Well, I don't disagree that there are a lot of configuration options. You do end up with a different set of problems. Like in my particular case, I have a transmitter on each floor. And when I move between floors, sometimes I'm still hooked to the older AP and it causes issues. Like my internet will go unreachable until it moves over to the next access point, which again, I've been monkeying with. And I think I've found a pretty good trade-off. It doesn't seem to be happening with the same frequency, no pun intended, after I had to manually adjust things like the RSSI and how much the 2.4 gigahertz transmitter transmitted versus the 5 gigahertz. And you have to monkey with it. I mean, you have a lot of granularity. That's the thing. You have the ability to tweak it to your topology, so to speak, but man, it's definitely a first world problem. I thought about just turning off two of my access points and just leaving the one on that's centrally located in the house, because I'm pretty sure that it can get, I could reach everything in my house with that one access point, but it hasn't come to that yet. So I'm still happy with it.
I'm definitely going to be fine with one access point with my 950 square feet. I mean, and I'm going to turn that thing on to where it glows. It's running so hot that it glows. It's going to be like superpower. That thing's going to like start floating in the air.
Go to Jim's house for a drink. Hey, did you notice that glowing thing over there? Yeah, that's that way on purpose.
You are going to like it. And the introspection that you get into your traffic and where things are going. And I mean, again, that granularity is really, really nice on the things that you can do.
Yeah, those graphs y'all posted were really cool. I'll admit that. Y'all posted a couple of screenshots. That was neat.
Yeah, the iPhone app is pretty cool as well. So there are times that, you know, if I'm bored or I have an idle minute, I'll VPN back to my house and fire up the app. And hey, there's new firmware for my access point. I'm gonna do my network maintenance here in the middle of the day. Beep 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 beep. And just start updating the access points. It's you're gonna like it. I have a feeling you're gonna drown everyone else out. I don't think that you're gonna get drowned out.
My other plan is once I have this running, and I know that's the case, anytime I don't see speeds like I think I should be getting, I'm going to be on the phone with them, and that they're going to be tired of me calling if, you know, because I'm really only here on the weekend. So if they can't get it working right for me on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're going to be tired of me calling and having them send people out if this is not working. We're going to get the wiring problems worked out in this new apartment.
One other nice thing, Jim, I think you purchased the Unify Security Gateway as well, right? It has a speed test built in onto that device. if you feel like you're getting, you know, crappy Wi-Fi, you don't have to actually go plug in your laptop directly to the cable modem to run a test to see what your wired speed is. You can actually, you know, launch the app, you know, through a browser and run a speed test there. And it actually runs a speed test from your Unify Security Gateway out to the internet to let you know what kind of hardwired connection you're getting.
Oh, that's nice. That'll be convenient.
It saves all of those metrics too. So you've got, you know, trends going back weeks and weeks. If you want to go in and, you know, show evidence to, if you get on the phone with Charter and complain and they say, well, it's fine here. And you can, you know, point out specific incidents.
One last thing, and then we'll let this, we'll move on to the next topic. You were saying that when you plug directly into the modem and you do your speed test, you get the great speed, you plug into your switch and things just go to crap. Is that right?
So I can plug into the modem on my own and it's still not great. But as soon as they, like, as soon as I get on tech support with them and they're like, all right, I'll check your modem, and they do whatever it is they do. Sorry, I know this is a technical show, but do whatever it is they do, come in and check the modem and then say, okay, run your speed test. And then I run my test again, the damn thing's way back up again. So I don't know what they're doing, unless they're doing some sort of reset on something.
Yeah, so at one point, for probably a couple of weeks, now this has been a couple of years ago, but I had a very similar issue to yours, Jim, of, you know, it would run fine and then just go to crap. And then, you know, I'd call them, they'd be like, we didn't do anything. And then it's, you know, super fast when I'm on the phone. Well, come to find out, once I was finally able to navigate through the myriad of the maze that is Comcast tech support, right, and finally got to a tier three person, what the tier three person found out was that my MAC address was recognized as a Comcast device, but had not been fully provisioned through their system. So it was letting me on as a courtesy at a lower speed. But once they finally were able to find in the database, you know, that MAC address was not considered like a long-term device at that residence, it kept reverting back to like a 25 meg download kind of thing. So maybe
that sounds exactly like what's happening.
Hopefully they'll get most of your stuff figured out when you move, but if not, we can do some three-way calls and get them whipped into shape.
Thank y'all.
So Jason, you've had issues with your Apple Watch? Do tell. What's happened, man?
Yeah, so ever since I've got the stainless, the actual stainless color with the stainless Milanese loop, bought it, you know, the day that it came out, and I had switched from, like, whatever the small Fitbit is right now, I think the Charge 2 or whatever, to the Apple Watch, because I'm kind of a data junkie, and especially when it comes to heart rate and whatnot, and I kind of just always felt like something was a little bit off on this particular Apple Watch, right? It would either read slow, or it would read, you know, considerably higher than what I felt like it was. So, like, you know, if I felt like my heart rate was probably in the, you know, upper 60s, right, it might read 80. And if that's the case, right, that, you know, that's a pretty sizable difference from, you know, what you think it should be versus what it's reporting. So I kind of did it for a while. Recently, it seemed like it had gotten worse, right? So I was actually leaving my physical therapist's office one day. And yeah, I had been working out in the office, but nothing crazy. And I was sitting in the car about to leave, and I looked down, and it said that my heart rate was like 154, okay, which, I mean, I would be totally out of breath. I mean, that's really exerting myself. I mean, that's, you know, if you've been running or cycling for a long time, that's kind of what your heart rate might get up to. And in my gut, like, I felt like I was probably in the mid 70s. And so I took a screenshot of it showing that. And then within the same minute, so it was like 11:29 a.m., it showed that my heart rate was like 70. Okay. So I took a screenshot of that. So nobody's heart rate really recovers 84 beats in the same minute. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Unless you're like Lance Armstrong, right? And his never gets that high to begin with.
Right, right. So, and then later in the day, took another screenshot where I had just kind of looked to see what the time was, and it showed that my previous recorded heart rate was 41. Now, on a good day for me, the lowest amount I'll get is like 52, 53, right? And that's pretty low for me. So a standard resting heart rate for me is like 56. But so to see 41. I mean, at 41 with my size, I'm passed out, right? Like, I'm in the ditch, I'm unconscious. So I just called, you know, Apple support, told them about it, you know, kind of gave them the couple of scenarios, and they're like, Miss Young, no problem. We'll run some diagnostics on it, take care of it, have a good day, right? And so, like, I would have expected just to, you know, send me a box, take a couple days, send it back, take a couple days. They look at it for a couple of days. So I expected to be without the watch for 10 to 14 days, right? Nope. They next morning me a box. I got it, put it back into prepaid shipping label that was also next day early morning delivery back to them. They got it, and within 3 hours I got an email saying that it had, you know, essentially failed their tests and that they had a brand new Apple Watch already en route to me that will now be shipped to me tomorrow. So I'm expecting to get a brand new watch tomorrow. So kudos to AppleCare. I don't know if they took that good of care of me because I bought AppleCare Plus, or if that's just kind of the standard operating procedure since it's still, you know, in first year full warranty kind of thing.
Neat. I've had issues with the heart rate monitor as well, but not to the extent that you have. Sometimes it's been more or less, I get a situation where like I'm working out and I'll be at like 140 beats a minute and it'll say that I'm like 180 for about 30 seconds and then it'll drop it back down to where it's supposed to be. So I've seen some, it's part of that is just sort of the weirdness with the green laser, but I've never seen the issues that you have. So that's pretty bad.
Yeah, and so like I don't expect this thing to be perfect all the time. I know it's going to have some false readings sometimes because of, you know, sweat between the laser and the device. I know that sometimes because I have a Milanese loop, if you're active, this band opens up on you because it's magnetic. So I realize that it's not going to have all contacts directly on skin, you know, in a perfect fashion all the time. It was wrong way more frequently than it should be, especially when I had a device that I really liked that was $100 that worked always, and for me to step into an $800 replacement that granted does a ton more stuff, but I was not going to be that guy walking around with an Apple Watch on his left wrist and a Fitbit on his right.
Exactly.
Those people exist?
Oh, they do.
They are exercise metric dynamos.
I thought I was pretty bad, but that's even worse.
But the one thing I am the most ticked about was I had gotten to 13 straight days of closing my rings and was on my way to catching Brian's like 600 days or whatever, and got to start back from zero.
It'll re-import that data. You'll be fine.
Along those lines, twice since I've had my new watch, I've actually gotten the warning message that your heart rate is above a certain level and we haven't detected any movement. And both times I was on flights from here, from Dallas to Mississippi. So my grandmother was pretty ill in Mississippi and not doing well. And I was flying in to see her. And it's kind of crazy, but you know, it's basically just stress. It's me getting on that plane, going to see her, worried, you know, about the situation. And I sat down on the plane, and within 5 to 10 minutes of sitting there before takeoff, I got that error message on my watch that, you know, we've noticed you're not moving, but your heart rate is above, you know, 120 or whatever it was. So I thought, I mean, that's kind of crazy that it can do that and warn you. And both situations were exactly the same. It's the only time it's ever done it since I've had the watch. And I've had this one since last May, I think, is when I got the stainless one. So, I mean, it's crazy that, you know, this device can do things like that. So I totally understand you want it to work right, Jason.
Yeah, so the other thing for me is, speaking of that, mine had done that twice as well, except neither time when it woke me up was my heart rate elevated. So I woke up in the middle of the night, it's telling me that my heart rate is high, and so I immediately grabbed the Mrs. watch and throw it on my right wrist and got two totally different readings. So that was kind of the, don't tell me twice that I'm in the middle of having a heart attack, unless I'm in the middle of having a heart attack.
That's the super, super fitness guru person. It's not a Fitbit and an Apple Watch. It's an Apple Watch on both wrists.
Baller.
Yeah, that is pretty baller. Except I'd want like double ceramic watches.
Oh, of course. If you're going to do it, you got to go for the top end on both. All right, on to the week of Apple news. So last week we talked about a company called Energys and their product called What Up? I don't know if you actually pronounce it like that, but I like saying, what up?
What up?
What up? Their charging solution. So it uses no wires, no inductive charging, look ma, no hands. It does it right over the air. And, you know, Jim had some issues like, this is witchcraft. Huzzah! This is going to give me a tumor.
It's cooking bacon on your counter in your house while it's charging your phone at the same time.
It's a floor polish and an ice cream topping. No, this was pretty cool. So it looks like, and we're going to post a link in the show notes, but the range is pretty minimal for now. So they did demo an all-in-one PC. I encourage everyone to watch these videos. They're pretty cool. They showed an all-in-one PC that had an embedded transmitter, and it would charge a mouse and keyboard. And they say that that could show up within 18 months. That would be awesome, never having to plug like a lightning cable into my Magic keyboard or my Magic trackpad. They just always work. That would be wonderful. Let's see. It's smart enough to switch between devices until they're all topped off, so it's not going to just be continuously beaming power. Just as we had talked about last week, because it was all speculation, we discussed it last week, but the further you go from the transmitter, as one would expect, the lower the power is cut down to the device. So, you know, you would expect that. The other demo that they had was a transmitter embedded into a Bluetooth speaker, and they used it to charge a fitness tracker and a remote control. So I guess what they're aiming for, at least in this first iteration, is putting a transmitter somewhere where you're going to keep something close to something else and then keep that charged. So that was kind of nice, I think, or kind of smart.
And a lot smaller devices than a phone would be. I mean, the battery that's in my phone is a whole lot bigger and has a whole lot more amps than the battery in my mouse here. So that makes a little more sense. But it would totally work for an Apple Watch, I would think, because that's the smaller battery device.
And not that they couldn't do this, though, too. So they did say that if you're worried about being zapped with over-the-air energy, they transmit well below the specific absorption rate, or SAR, of phones. So, you know, you're getting more energy from your phone than you are from the thing that would be powering it. And, of course, they're using beamforming technology, just like you see in a lot of your Wi-Fi routers today, and it only directs the energy in the direction of the gadgets being powered. And again, as we mentioned, it stops shooting the power out once it detects something is charged. So don't worry about it charging your butt when you're not looking, Jim.
See, I don't believe it, right? I think they just they made a invisible Tesla coil, and we're all getting zapped, but not visibly.
The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting is that they make charging pads. And I thought, well, why would you need that if you already have the Qi chargers that work now? And what they said was that you don't have these sort of coil specificity alignment issues. And if you have a charging pad now, you know, if you put it on there at just the wrong angle, you know, it won't catch and it won't start charging. I've done that before where I place it and it's a little too far up or a little too far down. And you go back an hour later and it's like, my phone is losing it. Oh, wait, it was on the coil right. And you move it and then it's fine. So if you have a flat pad, you'll know what I'm talking about. Less so with the ones that are sitting at an angle because it sort of forces you to put your phone in the right orientation. But I thought that was kind of nifty that, you know, they're using that technology. And with those charging pads, they can do as fast as the Qi charging. So they can do 5 watt or 7.5. I think 7.5 was what they said was the max with it right now, but still kind of neat. Do you guys think you would get one of these devices when they're released, or would you wait?
I think over the years, paid enough of the early adopter tax to let maybe 1 year's worth go by. This is definitely something I would be interested in. I see the merits in it. I think stuff like this is going to become the new normal, and whether that's 24 months or, you know, 72 months away, somewhere in that kind of time frame, I think you're going to see more and more of this. I just hope that we can kind of standardize on a good potential open source type of platform for this, so there's lots of consumer options out there.
I think I would wait a little while. I mean, mainly just to see it show up in the mainstream electronics. You know, Apple tends to either be leading the charge on anything that they release on their own that may not have had market saturation. But for stuff like this, I imagine they would be sort of conservative in releasing it or adding it to their existing devices. And I would probably wait until it showed up in the Apple devices, only because I'm not one to go and buy the most new all-in-one PC, because I don't use PCs, you know, for that example alone.
Fair enough.
I think for myself, it would take devices, you know, like I love my Logitech mice, you know, I've got the little Anywhere 2, you know, I love my mouse. And so, if it's something where Logitech released a mouse that had that technology in it, and, you know, you had to go buy the piece of hardware that would charge it remotely, you know, I might be inclined to go get it at that point, depending on the cost. But again, I totally agree with Brad. The way Apple operates is, if it's something that they're bringing to market, then, you know, they'll bring something, you know, like the Face ID, you know, so they're the first ones, you know, to really do it right. And so this is the kind of thing where they'll wait, you know, 3 years after Samsung has done it to say they did it and actually do it correctly. So this is the kind of thing where, you know, if it comes to market in 18 months, you know, it might be 36 months or more before Apple is willing to even touch this technology in their own hardware. So, you know, we'll see how it all comes to be. I really think it's the type of technology that if it really does work, this company is going to get snapped up by somebody bigger. You know, it's going to be owned by Google or Apple or Microsoft or Samsung at some point. You know, it's one of those four. If it's worth it, then one of those companies will own it before it becomes mainstream.
Totally agree.
Another use case I can see for this stuff is, say, for example, you're deploying like voice over IP phones or IP cameras, and you've got to power them somehow. So you either have a cable power camera that may be Wi-Fi, but it's cabled via traditional electricity, or you would have an IP camera that's powered over the Ethernet and it doesn't have Wi-Fi. Well, with this instance, you could have one of these charging bases in a sort of a centralized location and deploy cameras that are both Wi-Fi and don't receive power via like a wall wart.
Great point. That's actually a great use case there for the IP cameras. I would have tons of those, you know, pointing out into my yard and everywhere else if I didn't have to worry about running power to all of them. So that's absolutely a great use case.
You need to talk to these people, Brad. They need to hire you up.
That would be awesome. They've probably already thought of those type situations.
So there was a story this week that came out about how Apple's health data that's collected by the health app is being used as evidence in a rape and murder case in Germany. And I found this completely fascinating. So it was used to incriminate a suspect who was accused of dragging a victim down an embankment near a river and then climbing back up. And they used this data in conjunction with geodata, their public surveillance video, and they noticed that the suspect's phone was in contact with a particular cell tower for a long period of time. So going back up the embankment counted as climbing stairs. And they were able to use that and sort of coordinate all of this into one picture of what the person did. It has never really occurred to me before now that your health data could be used to either incriminate you or exonerate you of a crime. What do you guys think about this?
Damn it. My whole plan is thwarted. I got to figure this out.
It sort of works together with how they do accident reconstruction, where there's a car accident and the cops can say, oh, the car was going 75 and it skidded here. The skid started here and ended here without actually seeing black tire marks on the pavement or whatever. They know where things sort of went awry. And it's that kind of data that's sort of crucial to things like that, you know, to solve. Well, I guess in a car accident case for like someone who died, you could say it was their fault or...
Yeah, vehicle forensics. I mean, it exists. It's a real thing. I mean, and so this, I don't even know what you would call this. You know, is this wearable forensics or, you know, what are we talking about here? But I could totally see where umpteen amounts of data that's collected by this phone, where if you could get to it, you could tell a lot of different things.
Health data seems so innocuous, though. That's the thing that just seemed weird. Like, you think, oh, I'm going to see if I, you know, how many calories I took today or how many times I went up the stairs or whatever else. You don't think it's, aha, I can prove that you dragged a body down an embankment because you went up the stairs right about this time and there were no stairs where you were. You know, that sort of weird thing. I just never really, it should have occurred to me, but it never did.
And they could say, well, here's where you climbed back up the embankment because your heart rate went up.
So anybody out there, if you're going all Dexter, make sure to take your watch off that night.
Well, just remember, the phone also keeps track of some of those things, too. So if the phone's in your pocket and you climb the stairs, so to speak, it's going to detect that, you know, the elevation changed. It's going to notice. It won't track your heart rate, but it knows your steps taken, and because of the altimeter that's in it, it knows if you're going up or down. So even your phone in your pocket could give you away in that case.
This is getting all like Minority Report pre-crime-ish, isn't it? It's like, hey, we detected this guy's heart rate was up for like way too long. He's got to be doing something bad, right?
The FBI called Apple evil geniuses and jerks for encrypting your iPhone data. That ties into this pretty nicely. So the FBI forensic expert named Stephen Flatley, who was speaking at the International Conference on Cybersecurity in Manhattan, made the comment that, you know, Apple are a bunch of bad guys, basically, for keeping this data encrypted. And, you know, on the one hand, we want safety, but, you know, as you saw from the previous story, you're carrying a device around that is vacuuming up a ton of sensitive information about you that could be data mined in ways you've not even thought about. And it's kind of different than having a computer, right? We've seen cases in the past where, you know, mobsters or whatever would have some data on their computer detailing, you know, like some secret ledger that they would keep encrypted. That's one thing. That's something you're specifically compiling data to do something wrong. But you are carrying a device on you that is collecting all this information about you that you may not even be aware of. I don't know. I mean, I see where the FBI is coming from, but I see where Apple is coming from too. It's no different than trying to, if the police ask you if you did something and you tell them, you know, you're pleading the fifth, you're not going to help them build a case against you. They shouldn't be able to take this device, I don't think, and just mine its contents to make a case against you. I don't know. That's what I think. What do you guys think?
I agree wholeheartedly. In today's day and age, there's almost no reasonable expectation of privacy according to the laws. There's closed caption TVs everywhere that you've got nothing to do.
Yeah, you mean closed circuit TVs?
Closed caption. They're reading my life as it happens. Sorry about that.
I said pitch quiet last week, so no, I'm right there with you.
So yeah, you got closed circuit TVs. You've got license plate readers. You've got all this stuff. The cell towers that, you know, companies that you aren't even a customer of collect data about you. To me, I bought an iPhone 10 and stay kind of in the Apple ecosystem because I believe that the device is a device for my privacy, right? I secure it with a passcode. I secure it with Face ID. I don't really have anything to hide. But again, I'm not going to, you know, just turn over something unless the device can help me get out of an indictment or something. You've got no expectation to be able to think that you can just get into all my data without some kind of warrant or whatever. And even then, I'm still not going to willingly give it to you. One of the things that I liked in the article with Flatley was he talked about Apple changed the password guessing algorithm to make it slower and went from 10,000 hash iterations to 10 million hash iterations. And so they used to be able to brute force guess 45 passwords a second, whereas now they can only brute force guess one password every 18 seconds. You can still brute force into one, but it might take you years at this point.
It's also worth noting that when something happens and someone wants to get into a phone, you have a 48-hour window or slightly less to be able to take someone's fingerprint or facial features and open that phone. So it's not like you do have a small window to be able to bypass these controls, but if they don't move quickly, then they lose that. And that's sort of on law enforcement. That shouldn't be on Apple, I wouldn't think.
I agree also here as far as back to your first kind of analogy here, Brian, where you're a mobster and you're keeping track of like all the money that you pay out for hush money to all these politicians, and you've got this paper ledger in your office. You know, that is evidence. That is, you know, this paper ledger that its sole purpose is to record your bad things that you do, right? Whereas the phone, it's almost like this analogy doesn't go all the way. I'm still trying to work it through in my head, but it's like a presumed innocent versus presumed guilty kind of point of view. Whereas when you're digging through the phone, it's you're presuming guilty and you're seeing what you can find instead of the other direction. I don't know. It just, I totally get it. I mean, this device records, and we know, all know it does. It records so much more than we even realize. Like in this case where this guy's running up and down the hill, Apple errs on the side of, we know this is doing much more than people think, so we're going to make it much harder to get to that for that very reason. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And the other part of that too is that the biggest problem for law enforcement is when they're trying to go through the phone of someone who's dead. So if you have someone that's living, and we've seen this, again, disclaimer, we're not lawyers, but we've seen this in other cases where a criminal, we'll go back to our fictional mobster in this particular case, has something on his computer, he's compelled to give it up, he won't give it up. They let him just usually sit in prison until he decides to give up his password and unlock the device. So you can compel people that are still alive eventually, either through coercion, you let them sit in jail until whatever amount of time it takes to get them to crack, and they can give it up. It's usually only when we've had people who've committed mass shootings and, you know, then they kill themselves or get killed by the police that this doesn't happen.
It was the big Sacramento shooting, right? That was the big key one from San Bernardino. I guess it's San Bernardino, sorry. Yeah, that's like the big one that hit the news, you know, where that guy killed himself and they wanted to look into his phone, and that's the one that...
A couple of months ago when the San Antonio shooting happened, I think someone from Apple even reached out to the FBI and said, hey, you have this limited window, go and get the data now, because the guy had like a thumbprint. It wasn't even a facial thing like the iPhone X, and they purposefully didn't do it.
Why? I don't understand that.
so that they could make a big deal about the fact that it was encrypted and they couldn't get to it. They're wanting the big legal precedent where they get sweeping authority to unlock any phone. And if they had done it for this one case, then, well, that doesn't make their case, right? They need something that's a tragedy that they can use to garner public sympathy so that when they go and try to change the laws, that they'll be able to tug at the heartstrings and make that happen.
Don't I remember something about somebody in the UK wanting to change these laws also for, you know, basically making it illegal or wanting to put in a backdoor? Was it somebody in the UK or Germany that wanted to put in a backdoor?
We've seen this happen in a number of countries. I think China was one of those as well.
Yeah, China's got a backdoor already. You know they do.
Yeah, did you see earlier this week that iCloud data moved in China away from Apple servers to like third-party Chinese servers now?
And it was an accident. It was a complete accident.
I didn't hear that part.
They claimed after the fact that it was a mistake and they moved to remedy it. So there was a new High Sierra bug this week that lets you change the App Store preferences with any password. But as bad as that was, it wasn't as bad as it could have been because you had to have an administrator account on the box in question to be able to do that. And you couldn't bypass any other preferences. It's already been fixed in the latest beta. But still, this is really kind of embarrassing. And it seems like Apple's giving off the perception that between this, the root password vulnerability from a few weeks back, the general displeasure of customers over MacBook Pro hardware, and the long, long time between hardware refreshes, that they just don't seem to care about the Mac. And I know that's a thing that they've publicly, you know, said this is not true, but doesn't it just seem like the Mac and Mac OS is an afterthought these days?
Don't forget about the MacBook Pro hardware as well.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I said, the general displeasure of customers over MacBook Pro hardware.
I just froze up when that happened. I didn't even hear what you said. I was saying, don't forget about the MacBook Pro hardware as well that everybody's ticked off about.
Yeah, I said that.
Three times already.
Okay, I heard Mac Pro.
If your MacBook Pro wasn't freezing up, you would have actually heard me say that three times.
Okay, there you go. See? Point proven.
Well, it's like that article one of y'all posted earlier, you know, maybe yesterday or the day before about the guy who's, I think it seemed like his main complaint was, even though it's called a MacBook Pro, he can't use it for pro purposes.
Yeah, that was a real good article I posted. We'll have to put that one in the show notes. He's mostly complaining about the keyboard. I mean, that's the biggest complaint that everybody's got. But also, you know, all the ports and the touch bar is basically useless besides Touch ID. So, yeah.
Right.
I just wish this was not an afterthought. I really wish that they would put a little more effort into it.
Yeah, earlier this week, Brian and I had, I won't call it heated, I'll call it passionate discussion about whether Apple should split off Mac as, you know, a separate operating unit and have iOS devices on one side and Mac on the other and, you know, have it as two separate companies. I made the argument against that in saying they have so many billions and billions and billions of dollars that, in my opinion, there's no excuse for the shoddy workmanship that's coming out of the Mac side and the Mac OS side and the laptop side on the MacBooks, whether it be the Airs or the Pros. They need to hire more people. And there are qualified people out there that can right this ship, but I feel like it's Apple is so used to making their 45% on the hardware that adding the people required might take them down to 35%. And that's not something that they're willing to do. But, you know, they're definitely asleep at the wheel when it comes to security right now, because, you know, the whole root password problem that was out a month or so ago, and then now to find this one shortly thereafter. I mean, one of the reasons for many years that I would smugly tell people why I ran a Mac was I'm not as exposed to all the malware and viruses that are out there for Windows devices. But at this point, the Mac is...
If you don't need malware, if you could just type in right. Your password, then you don't need it.
Right. Kind of... So you know, I still feel like, you know, the Apple and Mac platform is definitely still the best consumer-grade platform that you can buy into right now. But it doesn't feel as hardened and secure as it once did.
Even though I argued for the case of spinning it off, it's not something that I totally believe in, but I was trying to chase down the line of thought of why they think this. And it's not, I don't think it's that they have a lack of resources or a lack of smart people or whatever else they're devoting to it. It's just that with the hierarchy that they have in place, they focus, they've made a conscious decision for whatever reason to sort of not devote as much to this as they do to iOS, which I get because iOS brings in a lot more money than the Mac does. But I just wish it wasn't an afterthought. That's the thing. Listen to the consumer complaints. Course correct pretty quickly. If people don't like your MacBook Pro, don't wait 3 years to go and make a new MacBook Pro. Get on that right now and release a new model the next year that addresses all of these customer complaints. There's so long between hardware refreshes that when they do make a misstep, it takes a long time to fix it. And things like the Mac Mini and and the Mac Pro that just sat there and languished. Like, I don't think there's been a new Mac Pro since, I mean, a new Mac Mini since like 2014, maybe. And that one was terrible. It wasn't well received. It's been a long time. They need to fix this. And yet they just don't do it, even though you have to think that it wouldn't take that much to fix it. There's some disconnect between the amount of revenue that this thing generates and the amount of time that they put into it. People buy Macs because they like Macs, but I think they're sort of coasting on nostalgia at this point, more so than performance or something I like about the hardware design. That's always been their big thing too, is like the hardware design has always been top notch. And I don't think they can say that, at least for the MacBook Pros anymore, or the Mac Mini.
Speaking of the revenue that gets generated on the iOS platform, I read something yesterday that just kind of absolutely blew my mind, right? We know there's a ton of devices out there, and you know the economies of scale to be able to put out new phones every year and what they have to do in the supply chain. But the revenue generated from the App Store, I read an article yesterday that Apple paid out over $25 billion to developers in 2017, which was actually higher than the gross receipts of McDonald's Corporation worldwide.
That's a lot of hamburgers.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, that's the 30% they're returning, you know, to the developers for their payment. The other 70% stays at Apple, and that's just iOS apps.
No, I get it. I mean, I get where the money is and why they focus what they focus. And I know that when they do hardware refreshes, they like to do big sweeping hardware refreshes. But for God's sakes, take the Mac Mini and do something cool with it. Just you don't even have to innovate all that much. Put out something that where it's not an embarrassment to go and buy one. Why are you still selling a computer from 2014 that wasn't that great in 2014?
Please just make it a Mac Pro without a screen, or an iMac Pro without a screen.
Yeah, those Mac Minis, there's that quad-core version that if you go to eBay now, it's like that quad-core version sells for more than it did when it was new because people want that.
It was still more modifiable.
That quad-core, yeah, it's more modifiable and it's got the quad-core CPU. And it's all about the verticals, right? It's how they're structured. They don't necessarily have a Mac Pro or a larger hardware vertical in the company. It's the way they're sectioned off is iOS and macOS are kind of pulled in together, and then all the hardware is pulled in together, and you've got to rank them and have priority somehow the way they're structured now. And the Mac is clearly become a second class citizen to iPhones, you know, and then I would say the iPads come in second, and then, you know, everything else is third. You know, hopefully the speaker gets a little bit of attention, you know, because if it's the same group that made the AirPods, you know, the AirPods is to me are the best thing Apple's made in the last 5 years are the AirPods. So, you know, hopefully maybe we can get another win there with the speaker. Although now I think we've discussed in recent episodes that I don't know if any of us actually want to buy one now, but, you know, here we are.
So CES happened this week, and there was a few announcements, not many that I found all that notable, but I did find it kind of interesting. I did put a few links in the show notes for this. So Whirlpool adds Apple Watch control for washers, dryers, and ovens. I found that kind of nice. It's really weird that it's device-specific and not necessarily HomeKit enabled, so you can't just pick up your phone and say, you know, invoke Siri and tell it to preheat my oven to 400 degrees. But if I were in the market for any of those appliances, I would definitely give them a second look, because I don't really have a sort of a loyalty when it comes to appliances, but being able to control those from my watch would be really nice. Oftentimes when my wife is about to go to work, I'm told, could you go check on the dryer in, you know, an hour? Could you go do this or that? And it would be nice to be able to, you know, control that remotely. I thought that was kind of nice. Google revealed 4 partners that are working on Echo Show-like devices. So that's going to be something. I don't really see the value of having a dedicated cheapo tablet with the assistant built in any more than I would the phone or a normal tablet. So I guess I'm still not understanding the value of the Echo Show ecosystem. Have you guys ever been tempted to even look at getting one of those things?
No.
Yeah, not really. I mean, if the integration was super fast and slick with, say, the Ring doorbell or the Arlo devices that I have, maybe. But like where I've thought about putting an Echo Show would be like in the master bedroom. Well, I'm only ever in the master bedroom when it's time to be asleep. Nobody is, you know, should be knocking on my door or out in my front yard during that time. I just don't have a, like, you know, maybe if you had kids in a large house or something and you wanted to drop in on them, make sure they're doing okay playing in the basement or something like that. But other than that, I just don't have any kind of real use case for an Echo Show.
I know cooking is one of the examples they use with recipes and whatnot. And yesterday I was doing some cooking for my wife and I had my iPad Pro in the kitchen and I'm watching Netflix in a tiny window. I got the recipe open in the main window and I'm like, I don't see where an Echo Show could do any better than what I already have for this device that I already take everywhere, right? I just turn the auto lock off for a few minutes and I'm standing there, you know, watching a movie and doing a recipe at the same time. This is perfect. I don't see where you wouldn't just have a tablet that does this.
It does seem very niche. I mean, you've got to be in a specific market where you're going to use that. You don't have the iPads and you don't have anything else. I could see that. My mom might use one in her kitchen more so than I would or yourself. So I don't know. It seems to me like Amazon's, you know, just basically throwing things at a wall and seeing what sticks.
So I have a coworker that really likes his, and like a lot of us who are technical, right? We have very few technical members of the family, so we are their tech support. So for him, it was way simpler than providing. Now, he's not fully bought into the Apple ecosystem, and neither are his relatives. So FaceTime and iPads and iPhones aren't very prevalent. So for him, he got Echo Show for him and his parents and his in-laws. So that way, they didn't need any kind of specialized hardware, anything. They could see grandkids, they could chat with brothers and sisters and that kind of stuff. And it was kind of a super simple interface, and they liked the voice commands that they could do as a secondary positive effect.
The last thing that I saw that came out of CES was that Belkin announced that they're doing inductive charging car mounts, which I think is kind of a cool thing. I hate when I get in my car and have to plug in my phone. I mean, not that it'll change for me, because that's how I interface with CarPlay, so I'm going to always have to do it as long as I have this vehicle. But I do think it's nice to be able to just put your phone in a mount in your car and it just automatically starts charging. Would you guys use any of those?
I definitely would. It seems to me like a logical progression, but it's also, I mean, you would still have to plug the car mount into something if it's going to be charging. So it's not like you're going to be getting rid of your wires. Not until, you know, Honda or Ford or Chevy are putting in Qi chargers built, you know, on your dashboard or console or whatever, will it, you know, actually be useful, I think.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Brian, in that one of my vehicles uses CarPlay and it's not a wireless version of CarPlay, which they do have out now.
Yep, some BMWs have it, but it's not widespread. That's the only problem.
Right. The other vehicle that I have, a 15-year-old Lincoln Navigator. So it would be perfect, because the head unit that I have in there is predominantly Bluetooth, has no CarPlay. So it would be kind of great just to be able to stick it down in the little cubby hole and have that cubby hole be a, you know, inductive charger.
Speaking of CarPlay, Alpine announced this week at CES that they have a new head unit that fits most vehicles and it doesn't require professional installation. It doesn't even really require you to get rid of your existing stereo, it looked like. So it looks like it's a good way to get CarPlay into just about any vehicle. But, you know, at $1,100, it's not really a cheap way to do it. But what I found fascinating, it's a 9-inch screen. It's on an adjustable mount connected to a 1-den chassis. And once it's in there, you can move it further up, down, angle it, whatever you got to do. And I kind of feel like at this point, every car should have CarPlay or Android Auto, because most of the head units that you get do one or the other. Because I, even though it's not a great experience, having the navigation from my phone built into it, having the ability to answer text while I'm driving through Siri, having the ability to just, you know, play a song through voice is just, it's very, very good. What do you guys think?
Well, it just seems like a natural progression, simply because almost any car you can purchase in the past 3 to 4 years is going to have at least a 7-inch screen on it. Whether it has built-in nav or it's just a really big audio player with really big track controls or whatever, I mean, it just seems kind of a no-brainer to add those features, even if it costs the actual purchaser of the car an extra $100 just to pay for the license to add Android Auto or CarPlay.
See, this would have been perfect for you, Jim, in your new ride. This would have been awesome.
That's what I was just grinning about, because I'm thinking, okay, so I'm probably the only one here that's driving around in an 04 now. You know, it's like my car is 13 years old. But I'll point out it's only got 35,000 miles on it still. So, but I just got my head unit replaced and some speakers put in. And I was kind of shocked at how cheap the head unit was, because I've got it's a pretty top of the line Pioneer head unit that they put in there with Bluetooth and all kind of illumination options. And it's got built in Spotify and Pandora and all this stuff, and it was $130. I mean, I was just shocked. I didn't even realize the faceplate was removable.
So you can ditch it and get this with no problem and not be out anything. I got it. Yes, exactly.
I was reading the manual, you know, as nerds are prone to do, and I didn't even realize the faceplate was detachable until I saw it in the
manual. Oh, that's been like that for 20 years, dude. Come on, man.
I know, but I just didn't know that this one did. I didn't know they did it anymore. Like, the cars still do that? You know, it's like $130, and I remember car stereo shopping, you know, from basically 1988 when I was the 10th grade in high school all the way up until, you know, 2005 when I was still doing this kind of stuff. And a good head unit was $600 and up. Like, you,
it
you,
still is. No.
I mean, if you weren't spending $600, you know, you weren't getting anything good. And this one was $130, and it's great. I mean,
go CarPlay, Jim.
The $1,100 price tag that I see on the Alpine, it doesn't really scare me. I'm not their, you know, target consumer for that. I don't feel like I need a 9-inch version. What it does tell me, though, is that number is, if they're at 9 inches there, somebody else is going to come in with a 7 at maybe.
Jason does perfectly fine with his 6 inches.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, the Sony I have is 7, so, you know, what do you say about that? Anyhow, my point is
it's not the size of the screen, it's the apps that you have on it.
Touche, sir. Touche.
Oh, God. Somehow that, I really wish that could stay, because that's...
I'm going to leave that in.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So the point that I'm trying to make is my Navigator that I got 4 years ago that I put this Pioneer head unit in, this is kind of a nice 7-inch Pioneer head unit. It was really nice at the time, and it was $700 back then. Whereas the head unit that I put into the 7-inch Sony with CarPlay and Android Auto that I put into my BMW is now $400. So I got a much better unit 4 years later with a lot more features, with way deeper integration with the phone other than just being a dumb Bluetooth receiver. So I guess the point that I'm making is I would expect to see a Clarion or a Sony or a Pioneer in the next 6 to 12 months that is configured very similarly at potentially half the price of the Alpine.
Even so, being able to go in without requiring professional installation is a big help of being able to put something in if you didn't have it. My wife's vehicle we bought last year has like whatever the Chevy equivalent of this is. It's terrible. And it wasn't even an option. Like, you couldn't get CarPlay if you wanted, even though the 2018s do apparently have it. So this would be something, I don't think she would let me put $1,100 into this because I don't think we plan to keep it on that all that long. But this is a nice option for folks to be able to get it into your vehicle. Even if it is a little on the pricey side, this is a nice thing. I can't imagine driving somewhere and I hate using my phone. I want to be able to use my built-in display to either redirect Apple Maps or something like that. It's pretty nifty.
So with the Bluetooth in my Pioneer unit, I got installed in the S. My specific purpose for that was streaming music, period. I never had any preconceived notion to use it as a hands-free Bluetooth in my car, mostly because the car is so loud. Trying to talk while you're driving, I really didn't think it would work. But they did install a microphone up to the kind of top left of the windshield. So it would work, but, you know, I think in an emergency situation only, because I'd have to be yelling as I went down the road for you to hear it over the engine. And convertible noise.
Jim, did you install one of those Mississippi fart can loud mufflers on your old school Honda?
No, I don't have a coffee can muffler on my Honda. It's just a convertible, and you wind it up till about 7,000-8,000 RPM, so it's loud.
So the last thing I want to mention is HQ Trivia. Have you guys played this yet?
I have played it. There's been a...
Yeah, I've been playing it since before Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. If you remember, I don't know if y'all pay that much attention to it, but right before, it was either like Christmas Eve or maybe the day before New Year's Eve, their prize that night at 8 p.m. was $18,000, which normally, you know, they do it every day at 2 and at 8, and it's usually like $1,000.
But that night, wasn't it New Year's Eve the night that it crashed and they didn't start it till like an hour late? Like, they were supposed to start it for the Eastern time zones New Year's, and it basically wouldn't launch, and the host kind of had to keep delaying, and finally, like an hour later, they started it at like 11:30 Central Time is when they finally got it going that night.
Right, and if you have notifications enabled for that app, it will tell you, you know, hey, we're back online, it's working again. When I first started playing it, they would regularly have maybe 80,000 to 100,000 people play, and then I guess right before Christmas it was about 300,000, and now they're topping 1 million players a night.
Yeah, they broke $1 million at some point last week. They had like a big $10,000 night, and that was the first time they had broke $1 million players.
Can you imagine that?
The furthest I've ever gotten is 9 questions. How far have you gotten, Brad?
I've gotten to 10. They do get really difficult. I mean, some of them, like the first 3, 4, or 5 questions, you could maybe cover in like a pub trivia or a pub quiz night. But man, they really get sort of esoteric when you start getting to the end of the line of questions.
It is pretty crazy. I mean, some nights, like sometimes I've played and there'll be 500,000-600,000 people and they'll finish with like 30 people that got all 12 right. I mean, it literally goes from 600,000-700,000 down to 30. It's crazy.
It's insane how this thing's blowing up.
And I think it's only been on Android for like the last 2 or 3 weeks, right? It was an iPhone only thing.
Figures.
Up until a couple of weeks ago, and it finally landed on Android.
It's already going downhill now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like the winners have went up, you know, when we added the Android folks. It's, you know, they play the first couple of questions and they're gone.
They helped build the pot for the rest of us.
Well, I think that we covered just about everything we had on the list this week. Do you guys have anything else before we call it a show?
Real quick, if you're out there listening and you don't play Trivia HQ and you would like to, if you use the sign-up code of Big Jim, that would help me a lot. So if you're not a player now, use Big Jim as your referral code and I'll get a free question when I play now. So there we go.
He's going to win that pot one of these days, and he's going to get the Alpine. He's going to add CarPlay.
The thing is, you know, like on a regular night.
$13.50, bro.
Right. I was going to say on a regular night, you know, you'll have a $1,000 or like maybe even a $2,000 jackpot, and then you'll have, you know, 30 people win, and then you basically get $30. Or, you know, roundabout.
I think that's been the craziest thing is it's not like they're giving away a ton of money. You know, it's $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever a day, but so many people are playing. You can't even win a whole lot. It's kind of fun. It's just a live game show on your phone. And it's a concept that really hadn't been tried until now. And I can totally see this really taking off into something more than this.
Agreed. To build an audience that big that quickly is just unprecedented for an app. I mean, that hasn't had a lot of promotion. It was a thing that was there one day and
right. It's been clearly word of mouth, and it's one of those things that it just people are showing up for it. It's not like they've got 1 million people playing and you can do it at 1 o'clock or 12:35 when you're on your lunch break. I mean, you have to be there at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. to play the game, and they still have 1 million players. So.
That's nuts. All right, fellas, that should do it for this week. I guess we'll see you next time, and have yourselves a good week, and later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas. Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim, that's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G, that's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle, that's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.